And a very good morning to you. My name is Nick the Moose Batsman. I'm the Commander-in-Chief at tiptv.co.uk. The date, Wednesday the 18th of February. We're here 10 a.m. every day covering markets and sport live from the heart of London, St Paul's. Purpose, make you money through thought-provoking ideas. Strong conviction tips for short-term trading. As we always say, do not gamble with more than you can afford to lose. Welcome back. Let's talk to Mr. Tim Price, Partner Director of Investment at PFP Wealth. Morning to you, young Tim.
Good morning.
You've brought along three thought-provoking slides, as always. Okay, fascinating stuff. So I'm going to keep my mouth shut and pass it straight over to you. Can we go with the first slide? What is this telling the Tip TV crowd this morning?
Yeah, we've been living for several years now with this great myth of deleveraging globally. So we've had a huge debt crisis. And the story we've all been told is that everyone's paying down debt, we've had austerity, and the problem's being addressed. This is a study from McKinsey Global Institute, that's just been published. And it points out this myth is just a complete fabrication. It's a complete lie. So this effectively is showing you that since 2007,
yep,
far from there being any kind of deleveraging, any paying down of debt at all, just about everybody in the world has added a boatload of debt to the existing supply. Global debt has increased by $57 trillion since the crisis began, 2007. Global debt to GDP is up by 17% since 2007. So far from there being some kind of fiscal prudence, the debt load has just got even higher. You will see at the bottom there are something like five countries that have actually delevered. The rest of the world has just gone off to the races with debt.
So these are the good boys at the bottom.
Correct.
And these are the proper rascals at the top.
Correct.
Singapore?
Surprising. I know there's some very unusual names.
I'd say the UK is a great example of that. And George Osborne has been the kind of master of saying one thing while doing the other. You know, he had this great charade of saying that we were cutting, and talk about cuts. We haven't had any cuts whatsoever.
Perhaps a bit flexible with the actuality.
Yeah. We've just borrowed and borrowed and spent and spent and spent. And
but then, well, the UK sitting in there.
I mean, there's plenty of worse culprits, but the point is that the general story is just completely untrue. There has been no deleveraging.
But I thought Singapore was a self...
It has an excellent reputation as a sort of sound money haven, so it's extraordinary what countries have been forced to do.
And the worst of the lot, Ireland.
Perhaps no surprise there.
Okay, well, let's move on to the second slide. What is this telling us?
So this is from the Wall Street Journal recently. There are at least five countries now in Europe where their government bonds out to 5 years are yielding less than zero, which is kind of astonishing. Bonds are supposed to give you risk-free returns. That argument has completely flipped over. That logic has completely flipped. Most bonds now offer simply return-free risk. Now, why anybody in their right minds would buy a bond offering a negative yield, you know, answers on a postcard, I would accept that pension fund managers probably have no choice because they're forced by regulatory fiat to buy this stuff because they're not allowed really to hold much else in terms of sort of liability management. Banks, investment banks and hedge funds probably buying this stuff because they're front-running the ECB, which for anybody else would be illegal, but let's not go there. And speaking of the ECB, we now have this. So in March, we have this sort of the QE program under Mario Draghi, and a mysterious figure of 60 billion euros is going to be bought every month. Where did that figure come from? We do wonder. It seems like it's plucked out of the air, but then it's symptomatic of what central banks are doing. Central banks are just making monetary policy up on the hoof. Discuss.
God, you're on your soapbox this morning. This is fantastic stuff. So, I'm a simple man, okay? There's no way in the world I'd want to buy something that's a negative return.
Correct. But in some cases, you know, some of the institutions haven't got a choice. So the likes.
But
of
that's
the
a regulatory process. Issue, isn't it, that I've got to have because these
if
are
you're
government...
a private individual, you can do whatever you like with your money. The sort of more alarming aspect to this, and I think there's a phrase we're going to hear more and more often, which is going to be this grim phrase, private sector participation. Now, that private sector participation is basically what's going to be involved when depositors and more specifically bondholders suddenly find that they had 100 quid in the bank or in their portfolio on Friday and they wake up on Monday and that 100 quid's gone down to 90, 80. Cyprus is the template. Cyprus is clearly the template for when cash-strapped governments next need to raid somebody's kitty. It'll be depositors at the less sound banks, Greece, discuss, and it'll be bondholders of the less sound credits. And right now, just about everything is unsound.
But when you did your first-class honours degree that you passed magnificently, None of the textbooks were talking about this, were they?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. But it's because I was at university in 2008, and it was kind of interesting. I was in France in certain economics classes, as they were talking about having negative equity in house prices in France, which had never happened before. And this is an amazing phenomenon that was happening in France that hadn't been seen before. And they were saying, you know, and everyone was taking notes about ending up in negative equity. It's quite interesting at the moment, like, how everything that had been taught for years and years and years is just, you know, being made up on the fly. And just to kind of return to your point about the ECB, it was almost like they crowdsourced that number. Mm. The ECB floated the idea of having QE, and their markets said, well, it must be this much. No, but it must be this much.
It needs to be kind of shock and awe. Yeah, it needs to be quite a punchy figure.
But each time the market didn't quite respond, every time a number got floated and eventually got to the right number, then the market said, oh, that sounds good to me. Yeah. And they floated that idea. There's almost an element of crowdfunding of that number that went out.
That meets our current inventory.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's move on to the next slide then. That's very thought-provoking, incidentally, Tim.
Slightly scary. We thought that was scary. This is also comparably scary. So it's a chart of European stocks, the Stoxx 50 index over the last few years.
Yeah.
You know, off into
so
the wide
beautiful
yonder.
Chart.
Lovely chart.
Looks as if nothing's wrong in Europe.
Exactly.
In the
all plain sailing. No storm clouds ahead. And then you look at forward earnings. So effectively, forecast earnings for the stock market. What's wrong with this picture? You've got the market itself soaring off into the wide blue yonder, but prospects actually going through the floor. What for me this represents is the fact that you can't trust any prices anymore. You know, it's all very well to talk in isolation about central bank action and QE and monetary stimulus and, you know, all the rest. But the reality is this is hugely distorting asset prices. So a stock market's going up because they're reflecting a more solid economic outlook. That would suggest otherwise. Stocks are going up because, you know, money is leaking into the stock market and investors are desperate for where's a safe haven. So this is not necessarily a bullish chart.
But in these kind of markets, why would you trust a stock picker? Why would you be a stock picker in these when it's such an agnostically kind of bullish market and complete liquidity-driven markets?
Well, I'd argue that the only rational response is to go for the deepest, fairest value you can find. So it's to go completely off index.
Okay.
Because I look back last year, okay, in my little black book. Now, how many people were telling me Tesco's were going to end down 43% last year? And similarly, how many people were saying that AstraZeneca are going to be up 28%? Being a stock picker in this market, my pals, I saw a broker yesterday, he was saying it's near on impossible.
Well, who could have forecast that the oil price was going to halve?
Oh, nobody came on Tip TV. We had one oil analyst, he said when it broke through 100, it was going lower. But, you know, the call was, you know, because of the geopolitical, it was more likely to double than half.
I'd say the correct response is to go off index altogether and just try and find these sort of nuggets of value in uncharted waters.
So this type of chart, does this think, is a stock market crash?
Who knows? I mean, again, because the issue is in a QE world, in a not just a ZERP world, but a NERP world, negative interest rate policy world, anything can happen. This could last for, you know, it could outlast all of us. But I think the reality is you have to come to a conclusion that this is what I believe and this is what I'm going to do and let the market just look after itself. But I was watching David Cronenberg's The Fly from like 1986 over the weekend. Classic phrase, be afraid, be very afraid. This is not a good news market. This is just an Alice in Wonderland market.
But people don't want to look behind the curtain. You know, I think that's what's happening a lot. Like, you look at China, markets occasionally take a slight glimpse behind the curtain and look at kind of all the unpleasant stuff that's behind there and look at the unpleasant fundamentals. The same here, markets don't really want to look at what's going on because they don't want to spook this. You know, I think there's an element that people are kind of being rationally irrational and looking and thinking, yeah, we know this isn't being fundamentally driven. Yes,
but for as long as the party lasts, yeah, you know, stay on the dance floor.
Yeah. The guy who stops that. And so I think there's an element of rationality going on that people are saying, yeah, I know there's problems here, but I don't want to be the guy who crashes this.
But I think you could argue that the Swiss National Bank in January gave you a sort of sign of what may be to come, which is there's a lot of faith in central banks. That faith is probably misplaced or is arguably misplaced. So when the party stops, you want to be near the door.
Yeah.
Okay, Tim Price, Partner Director Investment at PFP Wealth. I told ladies.